Welcome to Think Like a Dog podcast, where we explore dog behavior and psychology-based training to help your dog achieve their full potential.
Okay, perfect. You guys can see me, hear me, everything is good. This normally does not go this easy. Okay, well, tell me what's going on with Mochi, right?
Mochi.
Mochi. I like that better. So we're working through some fearfulness and people and dog reactivity?
Yes.
Okay, talk to me about it.
So we got her from the shelter. She was 2 years ago, yeah.
So 2 years ago? Okay.
During COVID.
Got it.
Very clearly abused. She had just recently had puppies.
Okay.
Don't know what happened to the puppies, but she clearly was recently pregnant. She was really afraid when we brought her home of basically any kind of noise or movement or anything. She had like scars on her wrist. Mm. Maybe she was bound or
ears
something.
Bitten.
Right, yeah.
Where her ears bitten.
Mm-hmm. So we brought her home, showed her love. And then like she was kind of settling in, and then like 2 months later, maybe, our neighbor dogs, they have five dogs, of all ranging sizes and temperaments. Somehow, I have no idea how, but they broke through our fence with like, I can't even identify where they broke into the fence. But a dog, a big,
all five of them,
not all five of them, the biggest and the second biggest.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Through and were like attacking her, and that kind of like shook her up, and you know.
Actually, you got bit.
Yeah, I got bit. Like there was no one around. Eventually, the neighbor came out and kind of grabbed his dogs.
Beat
the heck out of them, which
was.
So that was like her intro to our life here, on top of it already being COVID. So like we weren't really around anyone or dogs. So
because you couldn't be. Yeah,
because we couldn't be. So that was kind of our fault, not socializing her on top of her.
It's not your fault. You couldn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like there's no reason to like blame yourself because you couldn't do anything. You could, I mean, that's so many dogs right now that are about, especially when you got them as a puppy during COVID, turning about 3-4 years old right now. Everybody's struggling because now we're hitting social maturity. Now we're an adult and we kind of missed a really key socialization period, but with good reason. You couldn't get them out into the world. And even if you did, nobody else would have been there. So it wouldn't have mattered. Okay. So is that where we started seeing some of this behavior, was right after that, or?
Yeah, I think if it was a different situation and we socialized her when we could have, it probably would have been a different situation now.
She was, I mean, severely traumatized by whatever happened before. I can't, like, she's sitting here right now. She's beautiful. She's sweet. But, like, I can't raise my hand over her without her.
Kind of flinching.
She's been with us 2 years. She loves us.
She's gotten tremendously better at not being afraid of like noises or
Yeah. She
was afraid of like the wind outside.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw a picture of her or anything, but
yeah, I see. I'm looking at her right now. She's stupid.
Not a little. She's super cute. She's not a little dog or anything, but she's genuinely terrified of
a lot of things. Less of things, but you know, she triggers on some things like. Somebody beat her, right? Because if you raise your hand above her, she doesn't like it.
Yeah.
And there are some dogs, I'm not discounting that because who knows her history, but there are some dogs that I've known since puppyhood and I've known that they have never been beaten and are still a little bit head shy like that. So that doesn't necessarily always equate to a history of abuse. A lot of times we think our dogs have been through something just because they're reactionary to certain things like a rolled up newspaper or something like that. But sometimes it's just a dog sort of being on edge or, like I said, a lot of dogs are head shy, a lot of them. And I know that the ones that I've worked with since puppyhood have never been beaten. They've been adopted when they were 8 weeks old in great homes. I've known them. I've worked with them since then, but they're still a little bit head shy. Is that something that we can work through? Absolutely. But it doesn't always equate to, and I'm not saying it does or doesn't in this case, but it doesn't always equate to somebody physically beating them. Mm-hmm. But okay. So now talk to me about, okay, I can totally understand the dog reactivity because within our first 2 months here, we were attacked by two dogs. Talk to me about the human reactivity. Where are you seeing that?
So when we go on walks, she walks pretty well. She stays, he's making a face.
Oh, we've got two different faces.
She walks fine with me. If we,
what is walks fine with you? What does that mean to you?
She heals pretty well. If she starts, she starts sniffing something, and I don't want her to at that moment, she'll, if I tug on her just a bit, she'll keep walking with me. She pretty much minds her own business. If there's someone walking down the street, she might be like, who are you? But she gets over it pretty fast.
She doesn't bark at people on walks or anything like that.
And we take her, we've gone on plenty of trips with her and taken her to restaurants.
Oh, awesome.
And to Home Depot and wherever we kind of go.
She does growl when people get too close.
Yeah. She's fine in the public if people aren't in her business messing with her, making eye contact and being like, oh, you're so cute. She doesn't like that. No. But as long as everyone's chill, she's chill.
Okay.
When we're at home though, this is her safe space where we are. And for a period of time, there was no one coming into our house. And then as we started bringing more people in, she was very scared of people in the house. She'll bark at them, lunge at them.
When they ring the bell or come to the door, she still barks at the Amazon guy or
the UPS guy.
I would say half of the time she does that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we haven't had, when we have people over,
she's up.
She's away and she does perfectly fine in the crate.
Is her crate somewhere where she can see everything, or her crate's in a different room?
No,
she'll whine.
When people are over, we put her crate in a different room.
Yeah. She has a blanket over it. And it's currently in our living room, but if we have a lot of people over, we'll take the crate and put it into another room that's closed off. So she just kind of.
Okay. She can chill out. Okay. What about if you have one or two people over and do you still put her in her crate?
Yeah.
And do you still move the crate, or is it still, I'm just trying to gauge her reaction. Okay. So she'll whine when she's.
She can hear them and everything.
Why don't you tell them about some of your experiences with her, when we went to the pickleball courts or something?
Yeah, she just, she just is always running. She's always kind of looking around as if somebody, somebody is about to shank her.
Her head's on a swivel.
Way than that. She's just always on edge, but we have really tried.
You're letting your prison experience.
Exactly. No, we've really tried to make sure that we are bringing her out and we're not just keeping her in the house, because she would be very happy. And when I say happy, I mean it as in it would feel very comfortable for
content.
Her. She would be content. We know it's not good for her, but to live in my daughter's room with my daughter and have their own private island upstairs in her room. That my daughter and her room are the safe zone.
Okay.
So we try to work through that where we bring her to places and parks and pickleball and, you know,
okay.
Try to.
And she still does fine as soon as, I mean, as long as nobody's messing with her, she does fine.
So explain that situation of pickleball that was not good.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, if people are not, like, talking to her, ignoring her, like, she's pretty okay. And then...
if they're not too close.
And if they're not too close. So I tried to make sure we're, like, all safe. I'm on the other side of the pickleball net. Fence. Where we have friends playing on the, you know, playing pickleball. I'm on the other side of the fence so that nothing can happen. And, you know, Mochi was just laying down. She was okay. One of the little girls came, like, to look at her and bent down and was like, hi. And she just launched. She just okay. went from laying down to launching.
Okay.
So we, you know, we try to be really mindful. We try to be.
Launching at her.
Launching at
yeah.
her. Like,
yeah. Okay.
Thank goodness I had a, you know, I had a prong collar on her and the fence. You know,
oh, she was on the other side of the fence.
She was yeah. on the other side.
Good. Of the fence. Okay. Good. Okay.
You know, we're trying to be as safe as possible in
all yeah.
situations. Like we're not, but we also want to expose her to things.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's why when people come over,
we don't trust her.
If it's a small number of people, we'll keep her in the crate, in the room where she can hear everything and she'll be fine. She'll be okay. Obviously, if somebody walks in front of the crate and looks at her, she'll bark at them.
Okay.
There have been a few number of times, not recently, because we just haven't done it in a while, where, like, one person will have come over and we'll have her out on a leash, just, like, making sure. And she'll, like, settle down for a bit. We'll have them like throw her treats and things like that.
Okay.
And then she's chilled for a little bit and then like they'll get up to go to the bathroom or something.
And then it's all over.
What are you doing now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So just still constantly suspicious. Okay. Okay. Talk to me about the rules and boundaries in the house. What sort of, I know we're crate trained. When do we use the crate?
Sorry. Can we talk about one more reactivity issue?
Please. Yeah.
So,
sorry.
So my daughter.
You're fine. I like this. I'm like a different person every time. It's fun.
My daughter has like a big sort of apartment upstairs, right?
Okay.
Everybody else lives on the first floor. And on the first floor, she's pretty okay, other than when people come to the door.
Okay.
Or when people come. She's fine with all of us. But when we go upstairs, and by we, I mean everybody else in the house, but mostly me, and she loves me. She's right here in between my legs getting petted right now.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But when I go upstairs, or my wife, Les, or my son goes upstairs and we knock on the door, she's barking. And
okay.
when we open the door, she'll pet my hand. She'll, you know, and lick my hand, but she doesn't want to let me into the room.
She'll okay.
bark to let me in the room. So that's the other.
I think a lot of times she's scared. Like she'll be asleep and someone will knock on the door and then she'll start barking because she wasn't prepared for that. But a lot of times I think when you come in, just like open the door, it's fine. But when somebody knocks on the door,
yeah,
I don't know why.
But she's very.
Is that-
Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
She is very attached
yeah.
to Sydney. When we first got her, Sydney had mentioned that she probably had, you know, she had recently had puppies or something. So when Sydney would leave the house for any length of time, Mochi would sit and howl. It could be four yeah. hours long. And she would just sit and howl and howl.
Okay.
And howl.
Okay.
Yeah.
Until Sydney would come back.
She was very attached to upstairs, which is where she was primarily when we brought her home.
Okay.
And attached to me because when we got her, I was mostly taking care of her. Yeah.
We've tried to change that.
She yeah. doesn't have.
Okay. How?
So our boundaries now are she's not allowed on the furniture.
Okay.
She wasn't really.
Any furniture?
For a small period of time, she was allowed on like one specific part of the couch. She had like a little pocket. For a while, she would kind of sleep in bed with me for like a few months and then like on and off. But now she doesn't sleep. She has a crate. She's had her crate for a long time. She's slept in her crate. She's fine.
She sleeps in her crate now. Awesome. Good job.
Yeah. I feel that when you were sleeping, when she was sleeping up there.
Yeah, she was probably more protective.
Yeah. That behavior of.
Got worse.
Yeah.
Got worse. Yeah.
And that makes sense. Now we put a little gate at the end of the stairs. So she's not upstairs in my room all the time.
Good. Okay.
Just maybe like, I don't know, half the time, less than that, more than that. It just depends on the day. And she has a little bed upstairs that I tell her to go lay down so she doesn't jump on my bed or anything.
Good. Okay.
Not in your bed anymore?
No, she doesn't.
She would, we put the gate because Mochi would go up and lay on the stair, like she in front of the
door. Oh, and then
she wanted to be there. She put her big fat body laying on this stair instead of laying anywhere else on the first floor in the house. She would rather be laying on that stair. So we put the gate to really try to set limits as to Sydney's space.
Yeah. So she has that kind of, she has her upstairs time for a certain amount of time.
How long?
Downstairs, I don't know a certain amount of time, but it's just.
Would
like
you spend?
Okay. Now you've been with me for a while. Let's go downstairs or.
Okay, cool.
Free time for a few hours or something.
Cool. Okay. Okay. One of the things that I want to change is the verbiage of like she, cause I know you said she wants to be there. I don't know that she wants to be there. I feel like she has to be, she thinks she has to be there. Right. It's, and that's where a lot of this like responsibility comes from. Probably you feel like she walks well with you on the walk because she feels responsible for you a little bit and feels like she has to walk with you in order to be responsible for you. It sounds like we did have a little bit of separation going on or separation anxiety going on. And then it's sort of turned into a claiming, thing. Right. So we sleep in our crate. When else do we use the crate? Just randomly whenever you're like, okay, you've been with me enough?
Yeah, I think like a few hours a day or an hour a day in specific.
If we think there's kind of a stressful situation for her, we'll put her in the crate.
Yeah.
Okay. And that stressful situation would be?
Like stuff going on in the house, we're doing work on something, we're moving something, like
the vacuum running around, you know, like there's an automated vacuum. She doesn't like that. She's
okay,
not used to it, but
okay. Perfect.
She tries to lead the walk, which is why I say it's not great.
With you.
She definitely leads the walk. She tries to lead the walk with me. And I, you know, but
what do you mean? What do you see it with your daughter? Like she'll move ahead of her, or is it like she's making more decisions? What does that mean for you?
She always tries to be in front, in my observation.
When he's there, apparently, because when it's just the two of us, that does not occur.
Well, I think your definition of what's not in front is still in front.
No, she is. She heels right next to me when I'm on a walk by.
Okay, well,
with just her.
And when she's walking with me, she tries to be in front in the beginning, and then I remind her, and then she's okay by, you know, a couple hundred feet.
Okay, and you remind her through. Go ahead.
She's not like at the end of the leash or anything like that.
She
still wants to be like
a step ahead
of you.
Yeah.
And your body.
We try to have like a loose leash and everything.
Would you say that like when she's moving ahead of you, is that like you remind her through leash pressure to like, hey, come back by my side? Yeah. Okay. Okay. I just didn't know if we were using like treats or anything like that. Which I would rather you not, because it sounds like her head is all over the place outside, and I want to make sure that we don't give her another thing that she has to focus on.
Which she treats anyway when you're like walking. She's like, no.
She's always too all over the place. Everything everywhere.
Okay. Okay.
She wants to stop and pull and smell things, you know, which is
okay.
And she wants to urinate on everything. Even she won't. She'll be bone dry, but she'll still do the action.
So she's marking.
Marking. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a dog picking up real estate, right? So okay. So we've got a pretty classic case here. Which one of you, or did all of you listen? How did you hear? I know through the podcast. Is it you that listened to the podcast, or
I started? Okay. You know, we were really. My husband eventually would like to get another dog. And we also want Mochi to be happy in her life. It's sometimes
love that goal
to see her, you know, she's like so stressed out. It's painful.
Yeah.
Her tail is just sometimes like wrapped underneath her body.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean,
it sucks to watch her dog go through that.
Yeah. So I was looking for different things and looking for the, finally a dog psychologist.
Yeah.
And came across your mirror image and followed you on Instagram to find out your podcast and then find out you're in Georgia.
Perfect.
I mean, granted, we're
I know. How crazy is that?
I know. So, and also we did bring her to the vet and they did put her on Prozac.
That's okay. Yeah. So it's very common.
She needs some help in her life.
Yeah.
But
for sure,
my wife and I listened to your podcast.
Yeah,
love your approach.
Right.
And Sydney listens to it some.
Yeah.
Okay. I just always like to check because I don't want to. I mean, I'm going to repeat a lot of the stuff that you hear on there, but and we'll make it like obviously more like specific to Mochi. But I always just like to check because sometimes, and I'm assuming some of the stuff like getting her off the furniture completely and using the crate overnight, maybe it was kickstarted from already like, okay, maybe we need to go back to that from hearing that. So you guys are already on the right track. Okay. So with the walk, we'll cover the walk really, really quick. It's normally something that I delve a lot deeper into, but we'll cover it just as a quick little like things that are allowed on a walk and things that are not. On the walk, her head is not allowed to pass my leg. Okay. We're dealing with a dog who's severely, it sounds like human and dog reactive, at least enough to where she is, constantly on alert and not having a good time on the walk anyway. Okay. So if that means that I have to remind her 100 million times constantly, hey, no, walk with me, walk with me, walk with me, then that's what our walk is going to look like for a little while. We can also, kind of go back to basics and do some leash drills, maybe just up and down our driveway, going back and forth, getting her to like move with us. Notice that when we turn, she needs to turn with us, ideally without any leash pressure. I'm going to send you an email after this consult too, that's going to have a ton of information in it, including everything that we go over. So don't stress out. I mean, you're more than welcome to take notes, but don't stress out about remembering everything, cause it's going to be a lot. So not allowed to pass my leg. When we're on a structured walk, I don't allow like any tracking, right? So I don't allow her smelling. I don't allow not like no smelling whatsoever. It's more, you have to move with me. And I look at it like this. If I'm walking with my husband through a park and he goes and starts just like smelling the flowers and I'm moving, then we're not walking together. I'm not very relevant to him. That'd be like a kind of a weird thing if every 2 seconds, like every time I started talking, he went off and started smelling the flowers, right? So I want to get her to be moving with you, right? And at the end of the day, the whole goal is that she recognizes that you guys take care of problems for her. So then we have to start proving that to her on the walk, inside, everything, by making a lot of decisions for her. So on the walk, the only time that she's allowed to smell is when we invite her to smell. And ideally that happens when she's not even thinking about smelling. So she's like, you guys are moving along and everything's going great. She's moving with you. You're very relevant to her. And then you can go, okay, cool. Let's stop. Now go ahead, Mochi, go smell, right? Last thing, no marking allowed on my leash walks at all. I don't even care if it's like, I'll address that with my dog who's hiking with me. I don't allow my dog to mark because they don't own the place. That's them literally picking up real estate, right? That's her saying, okay, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. And that's very, very, very common for dogs that are insecure, because the more that they own, the more powerful they feel to deal with a situation. And she feels very, she feels like she needs to be in power, based on everything that we've kind of talked about. She feels like she needs to own a lot of things so that she can handle a lot of things for you guys, for herself. My bet is she probably feels like she owns the house a little bit. It sounds like she definitely feels like she owns your room, and maybe your space a little bit too. So we'll have to address that, and you might not like me very much after this consult. But we'll get there. I'll try to like rip the band-aid off really quick. But with the walk, no marking, no tracking. You are moving with me. I set the tone. I set the pace. I make the decisions about where we're going, what distractions we're paying attention to, what direction we're going, when we're stopping, how fast we're getting there, all of it, right? So I want all of her walks to be structured, because I think that that's going to make her feel a lot better. I don't think that she's going to have a lot of fun with any freedom that you give her on the walk at this point, because she doesn't have a fallback, right? And ideally, so there's two sides of this that I sort of create with any new case, right? The first would be, the first side of it is making sure that you guys are set up to be information center to your dog. So that comes with setting a lot of rules and boundaries in the house. That comes with setting a lot of rules and boundaries on the walk. I want her to look to you and be like, okay, all three of you, right? How do I perceive this thing? What do I do about this thing? Is it a threat? Do we run away from this? Do we go towards it? Should I play with this? Should I ignore it? What do I do, right? What's the expectation of me? And I want her to look to you guys for that. The second side of it is going to be giving her things to fall back on when she wants to opt out. I'm not interested in making her a dog who loves everybody. I'm not interested in making her a dog who loves other dogs. She gets to have her opinions about those things. She can't bite people. She can't bite other dogs, right? That's where we draw the line of you cannot like these things, but you cannot act that way about them. So that's where we have to give her something to fall back on of, and the idea would be, okay, well, when you're by my side, nothing happens to you. I don't allow people to come up to you and pet you. I don't allow people to, or other dogs to approach you. Nothing happens to you when you are by my side. Nothing happens to you when you're in the crate. Nothing happens to you when you're on place. So those are my three big coping mechanisms that we want to really work on. But right now, she doesn't see your side as somewhere where she can turn her brain off. She sees your side as somewhere where she's got the most responsibility, because she owns you guys, right? At least in her brain a little bit. And so we've got to kind of work at it from both angles of, hey, every time you're by my side, I'm not going to let anybody approach you or anything happen to you. But on the other side of it, I need to start switching your mindset and our relationship to be, when you're by my side, I make the decisions and I am the one who you need to look to for direction, not the other way around. Make sense?
Yeah.
Why we need to do so much structure everywhere just to because it's not fair. Everything else would be suppression. Right. If we just started telling her no, or go to place when she's having a reaction, place won't be a calm space. Place will just be like another holding pin. Right. It's, I want her to go to place because she knows she gets to turn her brain off there. I want her to stay by your side because she knows it feels better to not make decisions. Kind of like what you guys said, you know, it's not fun watching her stress out everywhere. Absolutely. Things are going to stress this dog out, just like it will for every dog. I mean, if you've listened to even one episode of that podcast, you know, I don't avoid stress for the dogs, because I think that sets them up to be bombarded with stress and not know how to handle it later on in life, right? That's not fair. I am not naive about the fact that there are going to be times where your dog is stressed. I want her to know, okay, I can go to my mom's side and I at least don't have to deal with that thing. And I want to make sure that that remains true throughout the rest of her life. And it sounds like you guys are very much in the mindset of, I'm going to honor this dog. So is like something that, you know, maybe Mochi doesn't want or can't handle, then fine. We just also don't want her to be stressed out for the rest of her life, at least unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. Okay. Questions so far? Do we feel like, I mean, with the marking on the walk, all it is leash pressure. So you set the pace. Okay. So you, and that can be really, really quick. Right. And that's one of my favorite ways to kind of do leash drills is I'll speed walk and then I'll go super slow and I'll see if, does my dog slow down before they even before they hit the end of the line in front of me. Sometimes I'll give them the whole leash and I'll make random turns and I'll see, okay, do you turn with me before you hit the end of the line behind me? Hit me. Yeah.
Question. How important is the walk and how frequent should the walks be?
The walk is probably the most important thing that you do with your dog. Ideally we do it every day, but I am not the type of trainer that's going to tell you that your relationship is over if you can't walk your dog every day. There's trainers out there that's like, don't even try if you can't even exercise your dog for an hour a day. I think it's important. I think it's how you do it that matters. So when you do it is up to you guys. I encourage you to do it as often as possible, ideally every day for about 30, 45, an hour. But if you can't, what matters is that when you do it structured, at least for an insecure dog like her at the beginning. Does that answer your question? Okay, cool. Cool. Okay. No more questions about the walk. We feel good about the walk.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
She marks so much. It's crazy how much she marks.
Yeah.
That's going to be.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean,
see if it changes her behavior when that is.
Yeah.
Kind of. When we try to.
The way that I look at the walk is somebody's leading and somebody's following, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times when I'm driving around and I'll see people walk their dogs, I see people clearly letting the dog lead, not just through position, but through when the dog stops, the human stops. When the dog turns a certain corner, the human follows them, right? So it's about decision making as well. So I look at it in terms of, okay, in every scenario, whether it doesn't matter what species you are, the follower should be paying more attention to the leader than the leader does the followers, right? So attention goes from follower to leader. Most of the time, we are either not paying at all any attention to our dogs on the walk and we're just on our phones and like letting them lead physically, like position wise, or we are paying so much more attention to our dogs on the walk than they are to us. And we're letting them lead at least energetically, right? With our energy of cool. Yeah. You made the decision to stop here. So let me stop. You made the decision to, you know, turn this way, or you want to smell this thing for a second. So sure. Let me smell or go ahead and smell. Right. So it's more, I think I see more, at least with people who are interested in training, the people who are on their cell phone probably don't even notice that they need to, that their dog needs training. But, I see more people paying too much attention to their dog on the walk, right? So they're very much like, okay, where are you going? What am I doing? How can I keep up with you? Rather than I want to switch that. I want the dog being like, okay, I don't know what this lady's going to do next. I got to pay attention, right? Which way is she going? So make it like, keep her on her toes a little bit when you're doing your drills. And maybe, I mean, if this is all new for her, I would say do, if you can, cause I'm a schedule person too. I don't like to give very specific numbers because it kind of, people don't ever move on from that, or they get too stuck there. Right. And they don't notice when something needs to change. But if I were you, I would say 2 to 3 times a day, 15 minute walks after and those walks aren't like, I would try to make those walks fully leash drills. So just truly not even focusing on distance, like how, like we're going to go around the neighborhood one time. It's we're going to go up and down the driveway 5 million times, or up and down the neighbor, you know, down the driveway and then take a left and go up and down the 2-3 houses, right? Not even focused on an actual walk, but focused on connection on your walk when she's attached to you by a leash. After those leash drills or after those 15 minutes, put her in her crate for 30 minutes. Let that information sink in. That's another way that I want you to use the crate, is through latent learning. So you do a training exercise with her, whether that's through place, whether that's on leash walk, whatever that is, put her in her crate. Let that information, like let her, give her a second to process it, because it's going to be a lot. Okay. But that's a great way to give her a second to be like, okay. And then she'll come out, and my bet is the next time, every time she'll be better. Go ahead.
So, we love your podcast. We, watch it on YouTube sometimes too.
Thank you.
But we haven't seen a leash drill on that channel.
So. Yeah. Well, that's because it's hard to do with a giant microphone in your face, right?
Yeah. And I'm not complaining. I'm asking.
No, 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 no.
Video that demonstrates that.
I have been meaning to make a video. I could absolutely make one today because I've got a e-collar dog here that we've been working on that, but with drop lead. There is, what I do have is an ebook that's a step-by-step leash drill guide, and kind of it's a leash drill, or it's all about the leash walk, and it answers, it's about 15 pages, answers all your questions about the leash walk and includes a step-by-step how-to with leash drills. So I can make a video. I've been meaning to make a video for about a year and a half now. But the ebook is up there for sure if you wanted to look at that today on our website.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So I had a question, or like, I don't know, a thought. When I take her on walks, yes, she marks, and she smells, but like there are certain times I'm like, no, let's keep walking. We're walking.
Okay.
You're not going to smell right now. And she'll keep moving with me. And then there are some times that I do let her smell whatever it is, or
I'm like, after no, she's made the decision.
No, I mean, I'm like, don't smell that. I know that there's spots that she is inclined to smell. And so sometimes I'll be like, yeah, you can smell there now. While we're
okay.
It was my understanding, which can be obviously an incorrect understanding, that those smells kind of like is information that they're getting and can sometimes like ease their anxiety because now they know more about their surroundings.
Oh, you set me up for this perfectly. Perfectly. thank you for that question. Okay. Yes, absolutely. But at the end of the day, shouldn't she be looking to you? Why does she have to be the one that gets the information? That's the whole point, right? Is that we have a dog who feels like, okay, it's up to me to decide if it's safe or not. No, it's not. It's not at all. It's up to you guys. And I want her to look to you. So the people who come into the center and they go, okay, well, once they smell you, they're fine. Great. But that's still them deciding if I am a threat or not. I want her to look at you because right now we know we've got a dog who's not good at deciding what is a threat and what isn't. We know she's made some mistakes there, right? So I want her to look to you. So every single time she goes out and she smells something, especially in that mindset of, okay, am I safe? Let me get this information. Am I good here? What's over here? What's over here? Now, if she was smelling around like, you know, I don't know, like a happy-go-lucky, you know, like my younger puppy of he's just smelling around just because most of the time it's kind of just to blow me off. But at the same time, he smells around like, okay, what's over here? Well, you know, let me eat this grass. Let me chew on this thing. It's like he's not doing it to know if he's safe or not. He's doing it because he's an idiot and he wants to get into everything and cost me a bunch of money in vet bills. So I think for her, it's fine. We all have our things. For her though, the whole point is that when a new person approaches, she goes, Mom, are we cool? And you can go, yeah, we're cool. Just stay by my side, dude. Like, and if a new person comes in the house, Mom, are we okay? Yeah, absolutely. Just stay by my side. Not here. You go out and smell and let me know if we're okay. That's a huge reason why she's probably thinking she's responsible for you, because you're sending her out to go and retrieve the information. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not at all a negative. Like, I'm not saying I absolutely allow my dogs to smell in the walk, but it's on my terms. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if there is a place where I know my dog loves to smell, then what I'll do is I'll work them off of that place. So okay. We'll go by a certain spot 10, 15 times. And as soon as we can do it without you trying to pull over there or whatever, then maybe I'll approach that place, make sure that you're still mentally, you know, connected to me. And then I'll say, okay, go out, go smell. But it has to be on my terms. And then there's sometimes where I won't even let you smell there. We're going to just move past it. I've got 15 minutes to walk you. Let's go. Let's get some laps in here. So it really should be up to you. Everything should be. But I mean, I definitely get why you're like, okay, well, when she smells, she gets the information. She feels better about it because she gets to know that everything is okay. But that shouldn't be her job.
Yeah.
That's a leader's job. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, you truly set me up for that beautifully. Okay, so other times for the crate, just really quickly while I, as long as we're good on the walk, no more questions on the walk?
Nope,
no. Okay. For the crate, overnight, you guys are killing it with that already. I love that you're putting her in there when people are over. Now, if it's like Thanksgiving, you know, you've got like 5, 10, 15 people over at your house, totally fine. Put her in her different room. Let her not be involved in that. But I would encourage you guys more to keep her in her crate when you've got a you know, more than 2 or 3 people there. Just so we can kind of gauge the reaction and make sure though that you are telling people, ignore the dog in the crate.
Yeah.
Don't go up to her. Don't stick your fingers in there. Don't stare in her. Don't stare her down, because we really want to teach her that when she's in her crate, she gets to turn her brain off. None of these people matter. Like, it's not up to her. So of course, if they come up to her and they kind of look her in the eyes and stare her down, it's going to be hard to convince her that this has nothing to do with her. So make sure you're advocating for her. And if you feel like you've got somebody coming over that is not going to listen to you, put her in a different room. That's best case scenario for her.
So the crate has a big, you know, blanket over it to like mm-hmm. make it. So keep the blanket over it and keep her.
Yeah.
Just, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are already doing it.
Yeah. It's also behind a wall. So
maybe
it's
we
not,
should move it in front of the fireplace.
Yeah. Would you think it's better like in the living room with everybody?
Ideally.
Kind of.
So she can realize, okay, all these people are here and nobody's messed with me. Okay. Nobody's even looked at me, right? I mean, that's really where we start to teach a young puppy even how to observe, you know? I mean, I think when they're really young, I'll put them in a crate. And when they're in their crates, they're in a separate room, and I'll turn the lights out and make it really good easy for them to rest. But when they start getting older, that's the best way that I can teach a puppy, hey, things are going to happen and you're not going to be able to be involved in them. For her, she's looking for a way out. So if we can really convince her, when you're in here, nothing happens to you, that's one coping mechanism down that we're practicing. Then we'll move on to place. Okay, so in the crate, overnight, in the crate, when people are over, do you guys feed her in the crate at all? Mm-mm. How is she food-wise? Does she eat her meals right up?
Yeah, that's her favorite part of the day.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't you... And she's 65 pounds. She's a big girl, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm 60.
Why don't you feed her in her crate?
She's healthy.
We like to call her healthy.
You know what? I like that too. Yeah, no, she looks all muscle. I can only see her her head in this picture and a little bit of her body. But her ears are flowing in the wind too. I really like it.
Body
picture. I like to... Go ahead.
I was talking to her saying it's her beach body picture.
She looks good in it. She looks good in it. Like I said, her ears are just flowing in the wind. She looks a little concerned, but she looks good in it.
Yeah, the beach was not her favorite place.
Was it like the waves?
The waves, the whole thing.
She doesn't like any of it.
Yeah.
The water.
But we still,
that makes sense.
Brought her on 3 beach vacations. So
good.
We're not doing things just because she
no, you are.
Like it. You know, like yeah. We're still making her go.
And yeah. Yeah, and that's, you guys are doing awesome with like, okay, yeah, you're gonna be stressed, but we gotta learn how to do this. But I wanna make sure the goal isn't we gotta learn how to do this so that you can eventually like it. It's we gotta learn how to do this so that you understand that whatever you're stressed about, you can, like I said, come back to my side and nothing happens to you. Go in place and nothing happens to you. Go in your crate and nothing happens to you. Because then once we start giving a dog really solid coping mechanisms, then all of a sudden we see a dog who's like, okay, maybe I do like this thing. Because the second that I know that I can opt out, I feel a little bit more more willing to opt in. Because I know if I ever get stressed, I can just go right here. Mm-hmm. For a dog who feels like, okay, there's no way out, it's really hard to convince them to go in.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Okay. Mm-hmm. So with the crate, and this is not something we have to spend a lot of time on by any means, because I want to talk about more rules and boundaries in the house. And then, like I said, that's the part you're going to hate me for. I would feed her in the crates and rest her after she eats. She's a big girl. We want to prevent bloat. So I like to feed them in the crate, give them a really, she already has a pretty positive association with the crate, but just another association with the crate of you go in here twice a day to eat. You go in here once, you know, every night to sleep. This is not something that only happens when there's about to be a stressful event. It's something, because if we only practice it when people come over, the crate is going to start equal stress, right? So I want the crate to equal, sometimes you go in here to eat and then you rest. Sometimes you go in here to sleep overnight. Sometimes you go in here for a nap time for no reason. And you guys are already doing that. Sometimes you go in here after I've exercised you or we've done some training exercise so you can process, but it's not just sometimes you go in here and people come over and potentially accidentally look at you and scare you.
Yeah.
Okay. So are you ready for me to upset you?
Yeah.
Do that. I feel like she should not be allowed in your room at all.
Ooh. Okay. That's a challenge.
For a little while. I mean, there's no way that she doesn't feel like she owns that space.
Yeah.
There's no way. Right. I mean, and I do think a little bit of, we have to turn your her attachment to you into a bond, not just this, like, I need her to be right here for me to feel safe. It's, I trust her to keep me safe. There's a two-way street here. And that's going to require you giving a lot more direction and a lot more structure over, or boundaries over you, right? Okay. So she can't just come up to you and get affection whenever she wants. Make sure it's your idea when you call her in. And then make sure you can also tell her to leave and go and give you space. And then once again, like I said, place is going to be huge on that. Have you done place work with her?
Yeah. We have,
you see how I changed the subject so you didn't live in the hole I told you to get hurt. You see that? Yep.
We should do that with Mochi. we have a few of the raised, what are those things called?
The raised beds. Yeah. Yeah.
She doesn't love them.
Like, she like is kind of heavy or something. It like slides when she gets them on. So she doesn't love that. So we opted for like just a little
bath mat.
Like a little bath mat, and that's her place in the kitchen. So mom doesn't like her to be around when we're cooking or anything.
Absolutely.
That can be dangerous. So when we're cooking, she goes to place before we feed her. Sometimes I'll like make her wait for a while.
Good.
So I'm just like place, feed her, and then I say okay.
Good.
Yeah.
So where's her default, like, if you guys are all, like, watching TV, where is she? Wait, can I guess? She's right by your feet.
Pretty much. I mean,
On a blanket on the floor by your feet.
Sometimes
she will. Yeah. If we're there for a long time, she will just go over to the crate.
She'll go over to the crate. She's like, I'm done. It's sleep time. But I think when we're all in the living room, she like makes her rounds. She like goes and she has you pet her. She'll go to Tyler. She'll go to Dad. Yeah. She makes her rounds.
Okay.
She's like, I don't think she's always by my feet.
She's always by a human.
Always by a human. Yes.
Yeah. She's always by a human. That wasn't at you. That was just, if there's a human in there, she's going to be right by them. If you get up and get a drink of water, she's coming with you. My assumption is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've been working on your podcast about telling her you can't follow us just randomly everywhere.
Cool. Good.
Follow you everywhere.
If anybody goes to the kitchen, she's following person who goes to the kitchen.
Because she wants to eat.
Okay. Is her food in the kitchen?
I mean, we'll just, she doesn't like really, she doesn't get into our food or like jump on the counter or anything, but we give her.
But it's like the smells.
Treats. Yeah.
Okay. So. So let's talk about place. I'm going to go over my last two things that I want to talk about are place and then muzzle training. I want to talk about muzzle training as well, because I think that that's going to be a big confidence booster for everybody, and open her world up even more, even though you guys did a wonderful job of not closing her world just because she's had some reactivity. That's really awesome. A lot of dogs with reactivity have a very, very small world because they just, people are scared to bring them out anymore, mm-hmm. especially when we've got a pit mix. Place. I want Place to be her default resting space. So that means when you guys are watching TV, I want her from, you know, how is that something you guys do every night? Watch TV together?
No.
Oh. Well, so then at night, is that where she's spending the night, like spending some evenings upstairs in your room with you? Or what is her?
Yeah.
Okay. So she's kind of all over the place.
Or she'll be, so her choice is my daughter, my wife, and then me, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
And then my son is.
He just happens to also live here. Yeah.
Right. So
she'll go in your room.
If the gate is up at the bottom of the stairs, then Sydney's not available. My daughter's not available. So she'll come try to be by my wife. Right?
Okay.
And then if my wife is in there, she'll come for me.
She has a place in your room.
Yeah, she has a place in our bedroom.
And she's there most of the time in the evening.
We don't currently have a place in the living room, though.
Yeah.
So we'll have I don't know.
What about keeping her out of all bedrooms?
Keeping her out of all bedrooms. Okay.
I mean, that's a no animal zone, right? Like, that's how it is in my house. That's my space. I don't go into your crate. Yeah. You know, like, that's my space. And then that's a huge thing that I teach my dogs of, like, if I go in there to get some laundry or whatever, just because the door's open, you've never been allowed in there. So they don't come in. They just sit by the door and look at me and wait for me and then trip me on my way down the stairs while I'm carrying a bunch of laundry. It's fine. But I would say no dogs allowed in any, because I think if we take your room away, we have a higher likelihood of her starting to claim your parents' room. And I don't want that. I want her to be very clear of what's hers and what's not hers.
So we're not going to let her go in my room for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
When that time ends, my room though is a studio. So like there's no door.
Okay. Like when she goes upstairs.
Yeah. It's not like
she's all of a sudden in your room.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like this is my bedroom. My bedroom.
It's a large
into my bedroom.
Right.
But you can go to the communal, like my living room up there. Like it's all one room. If that makes sense.
It's a bonus room.
Yeah.
No, I get it. Where is the door though? The door is
top of the
stairs. Is there a door at the top of the stairs? Okay. Then that's the bedroom.
Okay.
Unfortunately. I mean, for right now. And we'll see. I mean, we can play around with it a little bit more later on. We might be able to do like a psychological boundary from your living room to your bedroom. But for right now, I would even work on keeping the baby gate or that door open right at the top of the stairs when you go upstairs and she's not allowed in. Just so you have one more chance where you can kind of give her some direction of no, I'm going in here. You have to stay out even though the door is open.
Okay.
And that's like, obviously if you're going in for 2 seconds and then coming right back out, you don't want to like go to sleep and have your door open. Cause that's not gonna, she's going to come in the room, obviously. But yeah, I think we'll get there when we get there of how, like, I don't want to say never. Because I think that eventually we could have her upstairs for very specific periods of time. And it might even be that, eventually our next step would be she can go upstairs, but she cannot be anywhere but on Place in your room, like upstairs when she's upstairs. So if she's upstairs, she has to be on Place. She can't have any free reign up there because she's shown that she feels very strongly about the fact that she owns that space up there. So I want to make sure that we completely like work through that before we even try anything else. So for right now, nothing upstairs, but work on leaving that door open and you are able to go in and you're telling her, no, get out or go, or you can't come in or stay right there, whatever. Okay. Place. I want there to be a place in the living room. Is the living room pretty, like, can you see it from most of downstairs? Can you see it from the kitchen?
Not really. It's not totally open. No.
Okay. So you have a place in the kitchen. And in the kitchen, do you mean like in the dining room or is it in the kitchen?
It's in the kitchen.
Like where you would have to move if you're carrying pots and pans and stuff?
No, no.
Okay, so it's kind of off to the side.
Yeah, it's like closer cool. to where you eat by like the table and the eating kitchen part of the kitchen.
Okay.
Because I just don't want her by the food and all that kind of stuff like that.
I agree. I completely agree. I think the one thing I would encourage you is if you're going to put a place there, put it far, like as far as you can see. So you don't want it in the kitchen. Maybe if you can see the dining room or where you would normally like your eat-in part that you said you can see, put it as far as you can see, but not, but still somewhere where you can like address her and put her back. You can also tether her. If you've got like a heavy dining room table, or a door or something like that, you can put a leash on her. And I think in general, have her on leash for the stuff in the house. So then that way you can keep enforcing what you're asking. But go ahead.
I'm sorry. In the past, when we've tethered her to different things, she starts to, do a full fledged, just shake uncontrollably and stuff like that.
When he'll be tethered there?
Tethered her when we were outside, different working.
It's the things. Long leash.
The long leash, and we tethered her outside. And
yeah.
She starts to, but we haven't tried it in the house.
Long leash when nobody's holding it. She comes out of tether.
I mean, to me, that's even more of a reason to keep doing it.
Okay.
Right? Because it's not a scary thing. So we've got to show her, hey, when I tether you to something, even if it makes it, because it could be that, like, maybe she's reacting to the noise or something, like of when she moves, it hits the wall or something, right?
Yeah. That's
who knows? It is. Okay.
Like that it's following her.
Yeah. Now I remember. The following her. That's right. Yeah. That it follows her. That freaks her out.
Then we've got to work through that, right? Because that's got to be something that, I mean, when you take her on vacation, let's say you want to tether her to something and put a place board down and like let her chill out on place there. But you can't be like paying, I don't know, you're in the ocean and you've tethered her to something, you've got a place board there. You don't want her to be sitting there shaking, right? You want her to understand that when I tether you, it's really not that big of a deal. This is just the leash following you. So, and the only way to teach that is to work through it. So, just practicing.
I'm really interested about the muzzle training though, because we haven't done that.
I want to work.
We haven't found a good muzzle.
Well, we have muzzled her before, but
to go to the vet and like that sort of thing. But that's and you have muzzled her other times. It seems to heighten her stress because she doesn't like it. She wants to take
And it's associated with vet visits right now. That's the only time that she's ever been muzzled, right? So the muzzle training and judging by her face, we might need to do a custom muzzle. Because you're not going to find a muzzle that's going to give her enough pant room, and also enough width, because she's got a little bit of a fat mouth, which is my favorite type of mouth on a dog. So that wasn't an insult. If she can hear me, that was not an insult. But I will send you a link, in the email that I'm going to send for one of my favorite places to get custom muzzles. It's called Trust Your Dog Muzzles, and you will have to, before you order it, please remember, I wish they would put this at the very beginning. You have to you have to do very specific measurements before you put the order in. So make sure you've got like tailor's tape, like not your, you don't want any loud tape, especially for her. And they're going to ask you to take very specific measurements of her face. And then they'll send it in. You can pick out your colors, all of that stuff, and then they'll send it back out to you. But I think a muzzle would be huge for her. Having one that fits comfortably on her is going to help as well, on top of one that, I want you guys to be using this every single day, especially when there are not stressors around. So some days, once you get it in, I want it to be where you take her on a walk with it. I want it to be where you do your place work with it. You let her, I don't know, just walk around the house with it on. Sometimes you just go for a car ride. Maybe you go to the vet and then you get her out, you do some leash drills, and then you walk and you go home again. I want the muzzle to not mean anything. It's the most neutral tool in the world. It's something that we put on And it doesn't mean that we're going to do something or not do something. But for right now, you're not going to necessarily need the muzzle, because when you are having people come into your house, she's going to be in the crate. And then you're going to be very much advocating for her. Like, if you see people approaching her or even looking too much at her, you can even get like one of those bandanas
I have one. Yeah.
Yeah. Just step out in front of her and put her behind you and say, I'm so sorry, we're in training. That's all, like, for right now. And you'll probably still want to do that with the muzzle on as well. But for right now, we want to play it extra safe. But yes, muzzle training is going to be something that I would start with in the house. So use your leash. Every time she starts messing with the muzzle, you're going to give a little bit of leash pressure. When she stops messing with the muzzle, relax the leash. Do that for 10, 15 minutes once a day. And then eventually she's not going to care. And then you're going to let her kind of walk around with the muzzle on. Have the leash on her still if you need to, so you can address it. But yeah, I think a lot of it for dogs that just have different sized heads, it's because the muzzle's uncomfortable.
Yeah. It like smushes her eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, she's got like her mouth is huge. So I can't imagine it's not pinching her here too. Yeah, like it's.
Smushes her eyes. And I've tried all different sizes. So.
Yeah.
I would do, like I said, I'll send it in the email, but trust your dog muzzles. And we're going to do obviously a basket muzzle. So not the one that keeps her mouth closed. I want her to have plenty of pant room, be able to yawn, be able to drink water through it. There's a lot of muzzles that you can, they can take treats, all of that. But you pick out whatever colors you want and all of that, but just make sure it's custom to her, just because for a lot of these bully breeds, they need it. You can't do your regular Baskerville. Of course you can't, because it's, why would they, you know, why would you be able to do the cheaper muzzle? Do you guys feel, I'm going to give a quick summary of everything that we talked about today, but then ask me, well, what questions do you have so far before I do my little summary of everything that we went over?
Just, we still have the dogs who attacked her. One died, but their other dog is still there.
They got two more dogs, a husky and like a border collie.
Okay.
Who don't do any of their jobs that they would be doing, so they have a lot of energy. They feed off of each other's like bad qualities and have learned their bad qualities. So
are they fence fighting?
Yeah. So that's the other thing.
So, yeah. It's kind
of. So I would do recall off of that. So. Put her on a long line, let her go towards the fence, call her back to you, enforce with the leash, and then put her back by your side. That you're also you're practicing recall in that moment, but you're also doing kind of a contrast to feeling drill. One of my favorite drills to do with a dog who has reactivity, where you're letting them go out, feel that stress, and then reminding them, hey, you could just come back to me and sit by my side. You don't have to do this, okay. Right? You can also bring a place board out there and instead of putting her by your side, put her on place. So then eventually she can start learning, okay, I don't have to go out to the fence. I can just go to place out here.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. We haven't tried tethering her to like over here.
Your leash is going to be everything for her. So make sure, I mean, unless you are letting her outside without supervision, your leash, if she's going to drag a leash, make sure you are watching her, because you don't want it getting stuck on anything.
Yeah.
But your leash is going to be everything, because it's going to allow you to enforce what you're asking and get her out of situations that she doesn't know she can opt out of quite yet. That's going to be our first goal. Is like the first phase is teaching her, hey, you don't actually have to be involved. You can just be right here, you know? And at first she's going to think she has to be involved, because that's what we've been accidentally reinforcing for the last few years, or at least not even reinforcing, but at least letting her sort of be involved a little bit. So that's going to be our first kind of level. And then the next level is going to be, well, can she choose this on her own? Can she decide when to opt out on her own? But just as a summary, I've got another session coming up in about 5 minutes. So as a summary, it's going to be, our main focus of the walk is going to be structure. Okay. So relevancy 101, you make every decision on the walk. There's no marking on the walk. There's no tracking on the walk. There can be smelling, but only when it's y'all's idea. Okay. Her head has to be by your side. We're going to focus on 15 to 20 minute drills based on her stamina. Just focusing on those leash drills. Like I said, I'll also include the link for the leash drills in the email as well. The leash drill ebook, and I'll try to take a video at some point today. Inside, no bedrooms, and we're going to be focused a lot on place. So teaching her that, hey, when I go and get up and get a drink of water, you have to stay on place. I want you to read over a lot of the place work part of the email, because we didn't really get a chance to like delve into that today and really work on like leveling up the place work a little bit. And then I do want to do one more session, but I want not just one more. That's not saying that you can only do one more, but we didn't get into a lot of the like basics today. So I normally space my sessions out about 3 weeks apart. So I'll try to, we can look at the schedule once I stop recording and try to get something on the books. But my main things are going to be leash walk, getting some structure there, place work in the house, and a lot more boundaries. So no more bedroom, no more following you guys. Really be very aware of when she's in your space, so that eventually when we're outside with her, she can realize, okay, maybe I'm not responsible for this person's space because I'm not allowed in it all the time.
Yeah.
Questions? Okay. Feel good? Okay, and then I'm going to send you the link for muzzle training and stuff like that.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Think Like a Dog Podcast and follow at Mirror Image Canine for training tips. If you have any questions, please reach out to us via email at info@thinklikeadogpodcast.com.